In a blow to the Trump administration, four major global automakers voluntarily agreed Thursday to adopt California's emissions standards. Ford, BMW, Volkswagen, and Honda said they would not only adopt California's stricter auto pollution rules, but also use them as a national standard. The deal comes as the Trump administration wants to weaken the rules for national fuel efficiency as it tries to unwind Obama-era regulations intended to battle climate change.
After 12 long days of protests, Puerto Rico is celebrating. Thousands flooded the streets of San Juan, cheering news that Governor Ricardo Rossello is stepping down. The embattled governor had been caught up in a scandal of his own making after he exchanged sexist and homophobic chat messages with his top aides, messages that were later leaked to the public.
Boeing posted its largest ever quarterly loss Wednesday as Q2 costs soared due to the 737 MAX crisis. The world's biggest playmaker fell almost $3 billion into the red and spent just over $1 billion in cash. The MAX was grounded in March after 346 people died in two crashes in Ethiopia and Indonesia in the space of 5 months. The total cost of the crisis to Boeing, now more than $8 billion.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's July the 26th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We made it to Friday, but we've got lots to cover today. It's going to be another busy day in the world of business. We've got GDP numbers coming out today. There's more news on Boeing and some other economic stuff we need to talk about today. Of course, we'll also be watching the stock market as it ends the week, not only here, but around the world as well. We'll try to make some sense of it this morning with Paul Nolte, who's on the program today from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We'll have a conversation with Paul momentarily. We'll bring him in. We'll talk a little bit about bonds, a little bit about stocks, a little bit about the Federal Reserve and interest rates. That's coming up very shortly this morning. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from skiff.com with more on the 737 MAX, likely grounded now for the rest of the year. And the impact on Boeing is quite significant, and there will be an impact for passengers and for investors on all of this. So we'll talk to Brian at about 5:38 this morning. Stay tuned for that. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The trading week is winding down after a down day yesterday. Fears that the Federal Reserve will not be as aggressive as hoped in next week's monetary policy announcement caused stocks to drop. Strong economic data and comments from a top European Central Bank raised concerns, too, among investors that the Fed might back off on easing interest rates. The Commerce Department reported durable goods orders rose much more than expected, 2% in April, leading to speculation of revised gross domestic product forecast. Expectations of strong Fed action also took a hit when the president of the ECB said there was no significant threat of a recession in Europe. At the closing bell yesterday, the Dow was down 129 points. The S&P lost 16. The Nasdaq fell 83. This morning, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 82 points, nearly a third. S&P futures up nearly a third this morning. Nasdaq futures up nearly a half a percent. In Europe, markets are mostly in the green. In London, up by nearly a half a percent. In Germany, by nearly a third. In France, by more than a third. And the market day will end in Asia in the red, it appears. In Japan, off nearly 100 points, down nearly a half a percent on the Nikkei. In Hong Kong, down nearly a half a percent, more than a half a percent, actually. The Hang Seng off 196 points. In China, markets are up by about a quarter of a percent. And oil in the U.S. is trading at $56.36 a barrel. Looks like it's up 34 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. The second quarter GDP numbers come out today, and analysts are expecting to see the slowest growth in more than 2 years. The experts forecasting growth of 1.7% from April through June. We'll talk a little bit about that with Paul coming up momentarily. Senator Mitt Romney is against a budget deal that he says will add trillions of dollars to the national debt. The Utah Republican says the deal reached by President Trump and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi perpetrates fiscal recklessness in Washington. Romney says Congress should work to create a balanced budget that restores the country's fiscal foundation. Fellow Republican Senator Mike Lee also says he opposes the budget deal. For the first time ever, there is at least one woman on every S&P 500 company's board of directors. Online auction website Copart named Diane Moorfield as one of the directors of its company yesterday. It was the last of the nation's top 500 companies to have an all-male board. It became the last one when TripAdvisor appointed two women to its board back in March. S&P Global Intelligence, Global Market Intelligence, claims that 56% of the firms on the index have at least three female directors. That's a 19% increase from 3 years ago. Let's begin this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, good morning and welcome back to the program. Happy
Friday.
Good
morning. Happy Friday to you.
Well, where do we begin? Probably with the GDP numbers, right? Coming today, 1.7, I think, was what the main analysts are thinking. What do you see?
We're not too far away from that. I would say probably the risks, I think, maybe on the downside a little bit, so maybe 1.6, but nothing terribly far away from that. This number is going to get revised two more times, so this is going to be kind of the first look at it. But we've got a couple more revisions to go. The estimates, you tend not to be too terribly surprised by the GDP numbers because of all of the information that's already been released in all the various monthly reports. They're able to compile them and make a pretty good estimate. And there's some adjustments based on trade that get made later on. And trade being the bigger component to it, the lack of trade and what we've seen come off of trade has really hurt the GDP number here in the United States. So, again, it's following along with what we're seeing globally, where trade is really having a big impact on overall growth, not only here in the United States, but in Europe and Asia as well.
If it's 1.7 or even lower than that, that's really anything lower than 2. That's not going to be pleasing to the Trump administration, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, certainly they're of two minds. They talk about how great the economy is doing, but we need to have an interest rate cut. So you kind of scratch your head and going, well, if things are so good, then why are we cutting rates? And that's really been the biggest discussion around Wall Street at this point is, the insurance reason for cutting interest rates. We need an insurance, take out a little insurance by cutting rates. And I think really the betting on Wall Street right now is they take December's rate hike off the table by cutting rates by 25 basis points. And I think they probably should just kind of sit back and see what happens. But I think the bigger impact on the U.S. economy is not where interest rates are, but where we are in our trade situation. Hopefully we get that resolved, and they're supposed to be meeting sometime next week, I think. It's been very, very quiet on the trade front since May.
What do you think the Fed's going to take into account? I mentioned a couple of things in the open there. Everybody was looking at the European Central Bank yesterday, what's going on there. Obviously, trade. Will GDP figures, will today's numbers impact the Fed at all, or have their decision already been made, do you think?
No, I don't think their decision's been made. They meet on the 30th and the 31st next week, and we'll get their commentary on the 31st, and then we'll have Jay Powell doing his press conference. I would expect the markets to be pretty volatile from the time they announce their rate decision through Powell's press conference as everybody tries to glean what's going to be next. So I think the foregone conclusion is they cut 25 basis points, and they're going to cite some weakness in the economy. I think they're going to cite trade as one of the other concerns that they have because you are seeing global economies really come back here. Not necessarily recessionary, but certainly the manufacturing side is in a recessionary type scenario when you look at the global PMIs and the U.S. PMIs as well as the manufacturing indexes. They're below 50, which indicates contraction.
In Europe, I was surprised to hear there may be more easing. What more can they ease in Europe?
Well, I mean, when you've got globally, you've got over $13 trillion worth of sovereign debt. So like U.S. Treasuries, the German bonds, the bonds in Japan, you can loan money to the German government for 10 years and be assured that you will lose almost 0.5% every year by doing that. You know, we were talking before we got on. 5-6 years ago, we were all worried about Greece imploding. You can buy a 10-year Greek bond for roughly what you can get for the Treasury. When when Greece is going through their issues, that bond was 15%. So there's a rush for yield around the world, and it's pushing down a lot of those interest rates down to zero, and in many cases below zero.
Yeah, and again, that conversation we were having is people do that as investors try to find their yield, and they move to these more risky areas. We're creating a situation where if those risky areas, I shouldn't say if, but when, and we're talking about the stock market, right, mainly, when that goes south, you're going to see a major impact.
You will, because, again, as investors, you know, seek out yield, you're not getting it at a bank CD. You need to take risk in order to find the return, find the yield in this environment. And investors think they are coming through with riskless asset. I can buy XYZ stock, or I can buy the S&P 500, or I can buy junk bonds because I can get 4% yield, or I can get a return that I need in order for me to maintain my lifestyle. So that's really what central banks have done in this environment by pushing interest rates down to very, very low levels, is it's really impacted savers and investors more so than it has impacted those that are out borrowing money. It's been great for those that are borrowing. Certainly corporations have taken advantage of that. But it's really hurt the savers and the retirees as far as where can I go to get a safe 4%, 5% rate of return. And that just does not exist in today's world.
Paul, before the break, we were talking about the search for yields, try to find money, make money on our investments, and perhaps even being a little risky in doing so. Where does that leave our portfolios? What decisions do we make in that environment for our portfolios?
Yeah, it is kind of hard, and it's where, you know, you do as an investor, and in talking to a lot of the clients that are close to retirement or in retirement, the thought is, well, then I have to ditch all my equities and just buy fixed income because I need the income. And really, when we take a look at it, it still needs to be pretty balanced. You retire in your 60s, your life expectancy is still 20 plus years, which means you've got at least one or two economic cycles that you're going to live through. And so equities do need to be a part of that portfolio. They may not have to be 80, 90% of your portfolio, but they should be a part of your portfolio. So you still want a diversified portfolio. You want to have some bonds in there. You want to have equities. You do want to have some international exposure at this point, because I think those are some of the cheapest parts of the market. One of the things that we've noticed too over the last 10 years is that value stocks, those that are, you know, cheaply priced in the market, have really suffered relative to growth, and growth being defined more by technology. And certainly we're seeing it in the news today with Amazon and Alphabet reporting earnings yesterday. Growth has done extremely well, and value has done very poorly. So the dispersion, or the disparity between the two, is as wide as it was in 2000 when we saw a big shift. We saw the tech bubble blow up, and we saw value doing extremely well for the next 8 years. So we're in a similar situation. So you want to take a look at those parts of the market that a lot of people aren't looking at or are very inexpensive, but it requires patience. You're not going to see tremendous returns right off the bat, but they tend to do well over a longer period of time.
You mentioned a couple of earnings, Amazon and Alphabet, last night after the bell yesterday. Any other earnings jump out at you? Any other places where you might see a good investment?
You know, it's interesting because this earnings season is a little bit different than a lot of the earnings seasons that we've seen. You've had some within industry sectors. So yesterday is a perfect example. Amazon is down 6 to 8%. Alphabet, Google is up 6 to 8%. And so you're not getting that consistency in the industry groups. CSX, earlier, the railroad company, reported poor earnings and cited the tariffs and the slowdown in the economy. And you had United Technologies have a tremendous report. So even within industry sectors, it's not consistent. It's very company specific. So it gets to be a little tricky or trickier this year. Trying to pick those winners, so it's not that's the tougher part of it. So that's where we would like to have the diversification of a mutual fund or something like that, where we're spreading our risks as opposed to trying to pick those winners and losers. It gets a little bit tougher in this type of an environment.
I saw something yesterday that I'm going to go back to, and I mentioned this yesterday morning, but the situation at Boeing, and we're going to talk to Brian Summers coming up about more about Boeing and the 737 MAX, but Boeing obviously taking a big hit because of this. They're doing, I think, a $5 billion write-off, mm-hmm. write-down. One analyst yesterday said that, and Boeing's considering halting production of the 737 MAX, said that that would, if they do that, that would shave 0.6% off the gross domestic product, the financial equivalent of a prolonged government shutdown or a significant natural disaster. That kind of blows my mind a little bit.
Well, I mean, when you take a look at the durable goods orders yesterday came out, they were very good. And in there is transportation, and aircraft orders are a huge part of that. And certainly what you're seeing with a lot of the airlines, and again, you'll talk to Brian about this in a bit, is that turnover. I need to replace my part of my fleet every year. I need to upgrade. I can't be flying the planes that were constructed in the 1960s forever. And without that constant flow, and we saw backlogs at Boeing in the hundreds of planes, so they had a huge order flow that was coming through as companies were upgrading their fleets. It is a big, big impact, and it impacts so many other areas. So it's not just Boeing, but it's all the suppliers to Boeing. It's a big part of the economy, and you can see it in the durable goods numbers. When you take out transportation, all of a sudden that goes from a plus to a minus or a minus to a plus, depending on what happens with those orders on a quarter-by-quarter, month-by-month basis. So it is a very big component here in the United States.
There was a story in Forbes yesterday, and I think it's still online. You can find it where they had satellite before and after satellite photos of the Boeing production facilities, and all of the 737 MAX is basically sitting on the dealer lot, mm-hmm. as it were, with nowhere to go.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's a big problem for Boeing. Boeing has been extraordinarily slow in responding to it and trying to provide the fix for it. And so they're right now, from an investment perspective, and I've had people ask, you know, should we buy Boeing here? And I said, you know, there's so many other opportunities in the market. Why are we buying something where we don't know what the value of that company is because its main product is now under siege, if you will, and could be for the remainder of the year or into next year? So even if they were to ramp up production again starting next week, it's going to take a long time for airlines as well as investors to say, yep, okay, things are back to normal. You know, so it's right now you're buying it, and it's going to be shame on you if something else happens. So people are going to be, or companies are going to be very, very slow to embrace Boeing again.
Okay, Paul, how can people get a hold of you if they want to have a one-on-one?
And they want to chat with me, and we can talk portfolios, 401ks, et cetera. They can drop me an email at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we can continue.
All right. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next Friday.
All right. Thank you.
Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Focus now switches to the business of aviation and travel. It's looking more and more like the 737 MAX won't be back in the air this year. And Boeing is talking about perhaps halting production of the grounded jetliner. Let's bring in Skift.com's Brian Summers to help us understand how that's going to affect passengers, the airlines, and the economy. Brian is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift. Skift.com and is with us on the telephone this morning. Brian, let's begin with the 737 MAX. Lots of developments from the past week. One of them now is this report that Southwest has taken the 737 MAX off its schedule through the new year.
Yes, this just happened Thursday, Steve, and it was a bit of a surprise to those of us who follow the industry closely. Most of the airlines had said that they were canceling the MAX out until the beginning of November. Southwest went a lot farther than that on Thursday, and they said they're going to cancel their flights out until early January of next year. It's not a huge surprise in the sense that I don't think people are thinking that the MAX is going to be coming back anytime soon. But a lot of airlines have seemed to want to go month by month. And in this case, Southwest just leapfrogged everyone and said, you know, Christmas is a great time for airlines. Thanksgiving is, but we're not going to have these airplanes. So why should we pretend that we do? So that was one thing that Southwest did. The other thing is that they came out and they said that they are going to pull out of Newark Airport in New Jersey. That's sort of a New York City area airport. They did blame the MAX for this. They said, you know, they don't have that many planes, so they can't fly all the routes that they always have. But this, to me, is very interesting, Steve. Southwest is known for a bunch of things. One of them is an insane streak of consecutive profitable quarters. But the other thing is they very rarely pull out of a market. Once they go in pretty hard. So for them to leave Newark is a pretty big deal. And one interesting thing is that in a crisis situation like this, when an airline is kind of forced to cut flights, you start to see what markets were not very good in the first place. So I assure you that Southwest would not be leaving Newark if they were making lots of money there. So clearly they are not. And why do I talk about Newark so much? For one reason, I think it says something about your Chicago-based hometown airline. United was weak for a long time. Everybody remembers it. Southwest went in there. United has a hub in Newark. They probably thought that they could push United around, and it looks like they failed. So the hometown carrier, Chicago United, wins here. They have pushed Southwest Airlines out of one of their biggest hubs.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on there. I think one of the things I thought about when I saw these stories was, well, what's next? We know that the airlines are reporting their earnings, their quarterly earnings. Most of the airlines have taken a pretty big hit. Not a giant hit, but a big hit. If this continues for another quarter, what are we going to see after, let's say, another quarter or even another two quarters?
I'm not sure that we're going to see anything differently, Steve. The demand picture, as people say, is very, very good right now. People want to travel. I don't think airlines are going to take huge losses next year because of the MAX. We might be just seeing this for a long time with every month or so an airline will come out and say, nope, we thought we were going to fly the plane in January. It's not going to be February. They'll push it off month by month, and things will continue. One interesting thing is, you know, the MAX was flying a lot of capacity, and it's not flying right now. And this has allowed airlines on the margins to raise their prices a little bit. So there are a bunch of airlines out there saying, the MAX has hurt us, but from a pricing power perspective, because of the laws of supply and demand, and we have less supply, we're doing okay. I don't know if people have seen that when they go to Google Flights or United.com to search for a flight, but in the aggregate, airlines are certainly seeing a better pricing environment.
Well, the other side of this is how Boeing is faring with all of this. Boeing reported it's been seeing a nearly $3 billion quarterly loss. They're writing off billions because of the airline, also suggesting that perhaps they may halt, whether it be temporarily or not, production of the 737 MAX. That's a big deal for Boeing.
It certainly is a big deal for Boeing. I should caution you and the listeners that I don't cover Boeing in the same way that I cover airlines, so I'm not exactly listening to their earnings calls, but I do know that they took a huge hit this quarter because of the MAX. They don't know when the airplane is going to be flying again, and it's going to be a long road for them. I think that they'll be okay in the long run. But it's hard to say exactly.
Brian, there's another story that we've been following. You talked about Southwest Airlines exiting the flight, but I know one of the other good exiting Newark, one of the other low-cost airlines that I think a lot of people follow out of Chicago is Spirit Airlines. Talk to us about what's happening at Spirit these days. They've tried to be more on time, but it's not really working out so well.
Yes, people may remember as recently as about 4 years ago, Spirit was pretty much a terrible airline, and their current CEO has admitted it. They had a lot of trouble with on-time performance, reliability, and things like that. And you might go to the airport in Chicago, they might cancel your flight, and they'd say, we're out of luck. There's no way for you to get to your destination. We're sorry. So a new CEO came in 2016 and said, you know, we're still going to be a cheap airline. We're still going to charge for everything, you know, like water and things like that. But we have to run on time. We have to be reliable. We're going to lose our customers if we don't do that. So for the last 3 years, Spirit has really made an effort to be on time and reliable as much as possible. They've gotten a lot of kudos from outside groups for doing that, and their customers have come back. The problem is, Steve, that running an on-time operation is really very expensive for an airline, especially an airline like Spirit, right? Because you need to build spare aircraft into your schedule. So those are aircraft that just sit on the ground waiting for something to go wrong. Same thing for pilots, right? So you have a lot of pilots that are flying, but you need some pilots in reserve to take over a flight that's been delayed or canceled. You need to schedule more time between flights. So in the past, you might have had 35 minutes between flights. Now you might have an hour. So you've built slack into the schedule. You're not going to delay or cancel your flight. You can imagine, again, those things are expensive. So over the last 6 months, Spirit kind of on the back end said, we're still going to try to be on time, but we're going to remove some of that slack, and we're going to see if we can still be on time as often as we were before. People can probably imagine Spirit failed at that. So when they removed the slack, they started losing their on-time buffer. And they said this week in earnings that they have really had a tough summer, that there's been more storms in the southeast of the United States than they expected. They haven't been running on time. They've been disappointing their customers. And they're kind of going to go back to the old way. So they're going to start spending a little bit more money, perhaps disappointing some investors, to be on time, because they don't want to annoy their customers like they did 5 years ago, because people weren't coming back. They got so annoyed at Spirit for, you know, having these flights being 8, 10, 12 hours late or canceled that they stopped flying Spirit. So long story short, things should get better at Spirit.
How much is this costing them, though? Talk to us a little bit about the numbers. I know your story mentions a monthly cost of $6 million in April, but their second quarter results were pretty disappointing, too.
Yeah, you know, this is complicated financial stuff. Airlines use a metric called CASM, which nobody should know or ever think about, and it's cost per available seat mile, and that's what they would call a unit cost at the airline. Spirit didn't give any absolute numbers, but they said their costs, their unit costs will rise 7 to 8% in the upcoming quarter, so that's quite a bit.
Yeah, and so what will flyers notice first off as this change takes place with Spirit?
Well, first the bad news, right? You can't change this stuff overnight. It's still summer, it's still the busy travel season, and it's still storm season. So if you're flying Spirit this summer, you might still end up with delayed or canceled flights, and you might get annoyed. By next summer, Spirit said that they were going to add more reserve crews, and they were going to change the way they schedule their aircraft. So by next summer, when they fix this, it might mean planes stay on the ground longer in between flights, and it will probably mean having more pilots in reserve that can pick up a trip at the very last minute.
All right, Brian, good conversation. As always, we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures up nearly a third, 82 points. S&P futures up more than a third. NASDAQ futures up about a half a percent this morning. Let's check in on agriculture and commodities. Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
And good morning to you from the desert. We're in Scottsdale, Arizona this morning, where the temperature is 89 degrees after hitting 105 yesterday. But, Steve, it's a dry heat. That's what we always say about it. So,
it's a muggy heat here. The humidity's starting to build here in Illinois, so you're not missing much.
Well, the thing is here, they always have the monsoon season that generally begins in mid-July and goes into the end of September. That's when they get their rain. And so far this year, they haven't had what they call the monsoon season. As a matter of fact, rancher friend of mine up in Cottonwood, about 100 miles north of Phoenix, talked to him this week, and he said they got their first rain of the monsoon season on Monday, and they got half an inch. So they do need some humidity and some more rain here in the desert because of the ranchers, and the Arizona cattlemen are holding their annual meeting at the moment. And so they'll be talking a lot about, well, what we're all talking about in agriculture, China. And, of course, focus will be on Shanghai for the talks that will resume face-to-face with the U.S. and China on trade situations. And how many times have we talked about this headline in the last year and a half, Steve? It just never goes away.
It never does. Almost every week, at least on this program with you and me, almost every day, too. Orin, there's some news about the farm aid that's coming for the to offset some of the negative impact of the trade situation. $16 billion coming for farmers. What do you know about it?
Well, it'll be the second aid program that they've announced. And when they announced the first one last year, they said there would probably be another one this year, and now they have made the announcement. Details have been a little bit slow in coming out, but I know that you're going to, if you're a farmer and you want to participate in this aid program, you're going to have to provide information on acres that didn't get planted and on the condition of the crop, because that's going to determine payments that will be anywhere from $15 an acre to $150 an acre. But all of those details are being put together at the moment. We're getting them, part of them, released daily. And that was the latest one that came out yesterday. And again, check to make sure you know the deadline for filing for this second aid program that isn't really going to cover the losses that farmers are experiencing because of the trade situation. The other thing about trade, Steve, you know, we focus on China, but we still don't have congressional approval to sign the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, and we badly need that one. And then yesterday, the European Union said, hey, we're not going to talk agriculture to restart our talks. And the chairman of the European Union trading situation said, the U.S. is not ready to negotiate unless agriculture products are included in the agreement. But agriculture is a red line for us. I don't know how you can have a trade agreement without agriculture.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Orion, what's going to be on the morning show tomorrow?
On the morning show tomorrow, we're going to be talking to Rich Gebert, president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, to talk about the aid programs and the information that Farm Bureau is getting on how to apply, when to apply, and where to apply. And, of course, Jim Fazell will be here to talk about some of the current problems that are plaguing gardeners and lawns and things of that type. So that's what we'll have tomorrow.
All right. We'll be listening. Orin, have a great weekend.
Same to you, my friend.
All right. The morning show tomorrow morning at 5, right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, July the 26th. Second quarter GDP out today. Analysts expect to see the slowest growth in more than 2 years. Experts are forecasting only 1.7 to 1.8% growth from April through June. That's well below the first quarter's 3.1% growth, and economists blame it on the continuing trade situation. Also today, big day continuing for earnings, including a couple of Illinois companies. McDonald's is in there, Illinois Tool Works, AbbVie, Twitter, Colgate-Palmolive, and Phillips 66. Also today, Wanda Sports, the Chinese company behind the Ironman triathlon, scheduled to start trading on the NASDAQ. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, July the 26th.